Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
I was just thinking about this before. Srila Prabhupada explains that the nature of the body is this fire on the body. So when the fire is weak, the fire of digestion is weak, then your eyesight becomes weak. So therefore you have to wear glasses. Yeah? So when the fire is strong, then all the senses, you know, everything works well. But because of diminishing fire. So it's very scientific, the whole Vedic approach. Whereas the Western approach is like, you know, there's a symptom, I'll put a band-aid on it. Not actually look at, you know, what is the cause of that, where it's come from, but, you know, just give you a pair of glasses. But, you know, they don't actually address the root of the problem. Whereas the Vedic science is aimed at addressing the root of the problem. You know, oh, we're suffering here in this material world. Oh, we'll give you some sense gratification. That'll alleviate your suffering. But no, what's the root cause of the suffering? They don't actually see that. Whereas this is what this, you know, this Vedic science is about, is identifying the root cause of the suffering, which is avidya, ignorance. We think we're the body. That's why we're suffering. And we see, you know, these teachings of Queen Kunti are really amazing. Prabhupada actually gave a whole series of classes which was put into the book called The Teachings of Queen Kunti, focusing on these verses by Queen Kunti. They're quite amazing verses. Abhyadyanastram sakrite hita prabho chihasasi svitsurino nujivina yesham nachanyad bhavata padambujat Parayanam rajasu yojitang hasam Abhyadyanastam sakrite hita prabho Chihasasi svitsurido nujivana Yesham nachanyad bhavata padambujat Parayanam rajasu yojitang hasam Tvam, you, Svakrita, self-executed, Ihita, all duties, Prabho, O my Lord, Jihasasi, giving up, Svit, possibly. Surida, intimate friends. Anujivina, living at the mercy of. Yesham, of whom? Na, nor. Cha, and. Anyat, anyone else. Bhavata, your. Padambujat, from the lotus feet. Parayana, dependent. Rajasu, unto the kings. Yojita, engaged in. Anghasam, enmity. O my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today, although we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all kings are at enmity with us? Responsively, O my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today? Though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us. Now when all kings are at enmity with us. So there's a few interesting verses, a few interesting words here in this verse. The first one is, the first one that strikes my mind is I was discussing with Prabhu this morning, is Anujivana, living at the mercy of. So different ways that's used is because Anu means to, generally means to follow, you know, like Anu Radha, one who follows Radha, means Lalita. So Anujivana, it can also mean servant, and it can also mean employee. You know, so it's like if you take it in the context of the different meanings, you can actually see what Kunti is saying. Just like a servant is completely dependent upon the master for everything, their food, their shelter, everything comes from us. An employee is completely dependent upon the employer for their income. They can't get it from anywhere else. So here we see, you know, Kunti, she's saying living at the mercy of, or Prabhupada's translating as living as the mercy of. But it's actually indicating how she sees herself. That if it wasn't for Krishna, she would have nothing. She'd have no shelter. She'd have no protection. And she feels like that. She's completely surrendered to Krishna. And Prabhupada defines that this verse means full surrender. If you listen to the lectures that Prabhupada's given on this verse, well, he's given one lecture on this verse, and he says this is actually full surrender. Then we see towards the end this word parayanam also indicates the same thing, dependent, Vasudeva parayana, how one's completely dependent upon Krishna, how one is taking shelter of Krishna only, different words like that. And there was another word here I found particularly interesting. It's talking about here, Surita, which Prabhupada, for some reason, has chosen not to incorporate that into the translation. But Kunti's saying that they've had to give up the intimate friends. They've given up, you know, she's given up all these connections. You know, and we see in the previous verses she's praying, you know, that Krishna, you know, I want to give up these connections. That, what's that verse? What is it? Gosh, I've gone blank on it. There's a previous verse where she's saying that you know, give up our attachment to the Vrishnis and dynasty, and you know that verse, Rula? No, what's the other one? I can't remember. Anyway, she's saying that, like, my Lord, you know, just enable me to give up my attachments to my family, man. You know, because Prabhupada comments on this, like, with the woman when she gets married, she becomes attached to both families. So she's married into the she's from the Vrishni dynasty, and she's from the Yadu, and she's married into the Vrishni. I can't remember which one, but she's praying to Krishna, you help me to give up attachments for both of these dynasties. So here it's like jihasi sutrida, giving up this connection with intimate friends, and she's just completely surrendered to Krishna, and she's looking to Krishna for everything. And we see in this a few verses previously here, which are also very interesting in this regard. Is verse 24 and 25. And in verse 24, she's saying, "My dear Lord Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly." They're referring to when Draupadi was being disrobed. That's it, yeah. Because I was trying to remember the devotee that used to live here before Vishvesh, and then it became Vishvatma. Atta Vishveshva Vishvatma Vishvamurti Sakeshame. Sneham pasham, this sneha. Sneha is interesting. It's like oil. And oil always flows down. So the affection, all it, and this it's used in the sense of affection, but affection naturally flows down. We were just talking with someone last night, and their grandfather had recently passed away, and their mother was the youngest one in the family, and he was describing how, you know, that naturally that affection is there for the youngest child. So this word sneha, it means affection, but the affection flows down, like oil flows down towards the youngest. And we see in the family. Sanskrit's amazing, you know, it's just the way the words are being used and the understanding of the words. In the family, it's always, I remember in our family, the youngest boy, he was, you know, the focus of my parents' attention. You know, because he's the youngest, they're always affectionate towards the youngest child, more so than the other children. Even though they love all the other children, but the youngest one gets all the, you know, the affection. So interesting. So it says sneha pasham chindi dridam pandishudushinshu. You give me this, I want to cut off this affection from my family members because I just want to focus on you alone. And now she's, you know, the, and in Prabhupada's teachings of Queen Kunti, then he's saying this verse, this is full surrender. This is absolute surrender, this verse. Kunti is just giving up everything, nothing else. I just surrender to you. And in the previous verses, she's saying here that in verse 24, she says, my dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake. Remember they tried to, Kauravas, they tried to poison Bhishma Dev. And we see, you know, a really interesting arrangement that they poisoned Krishna, Bhishma Dev. He went unconscious, they threw him into the river. And they thought, great, finished, got rid of him. Because, you know, Duryodhana actually understood that Bhishma Dev would be a great problem for them. That he would be able to destroy all of them. And then actually, later on he took a vow where he would kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra. And he did that. He killed every one of them, all 100 sons. And then what happened? Krishna's arrangement. Bhishma was thrown into the river after he was poisoned by this cake. And there was all these nagas living down, the snakes that were living down the river, and they all bit him. Because they were just, snakes by nature. You're lucky around here, you don't have many snakes. In Mullumbah, we have lots of snakes. I've almost stood on a few. But the snakes bit him. And because, like I say, their nature is to bite, because they're envious. And their poison counteract the poison in the cave. So Bhishma Dev, he spent some time with the Nagas. Did he marry one of the Naga queens, I think? I think he married a Naga queen. And So then he was able to come back, and Duryodhana was very shocked. I thought we'd got rid of this guy, and there he is coming back. And then from a great fire, the house of lack, by the various intrigues, Dhritarashtra was trying to have the Pandavas burnt to death in the house of lack, but then by Vidura's arrangement, and ultimately from Krishna, we see that he was able to save them from cannibals. Bhishma was able to defeat Hidimba. Great, great Rakshasa. Very, very powerful. You read the description of the battle they had. It was just amazing. The fight they were having, like ripping up trees and bashing each other, trying to kill each other, bashing the trees and stuff. Then from the vicious assembly, it's interesting the way that Kunti describes this, the vicious assembly, because Dushasan tried to disrobe Draupadi, which is such a heinous thing to do, is to forcibly, this day and age is so common. But, back in there in a cultured age, for so-called cultured men, and they're supposed to be cultured because they're the ruler of the world, at that time the Kauravas were ruling the world, they're supposed to be cultured, and they're disrobing a noble woman in a public assembly. That was just like heinous activity. And for these types of things, Krishna determined to wipe them out because of the way they persecuted his devotee. And then from the sufferings during our exile in the forest, so 13 years they were in exile, and actually 1 year they were completely incognito. No one knew where they were. Another amazing story that how they're incognito and the way they became revealed again. And then from the battle where the generals fought, and we see, if you read the Battle of Kurukshetra, the different things that happened at the Battle of Kurukshetra and how Krishna did so many things to protect the Pandavas, because there were so many powerful Astras were there, and he just made arrangements to just absorb all those Astras. Even one, his Pashupata Astra was thrown at Arjuna. And if that Astra had hit Arjuna, it would have killed him. Now, I can't remember which one. There was two Astras. One Krishna took on his chest and just turned into a flower garland and fell on the floor. And the other one, Krishna pushed down on the chariot, and the Astra hit Arjuna. And the chariot sunk into the earth. Because the weight of Krishna is just, you cannot calculate. So he just pushed on the chariot and sunk into the earth, and it knocked off Arjuna's crown. And Arjuna became really angry. He said, "Why'd you do that? I'm fighting this battle. You just be the chariot driver." And then Krishna explained to him, "If that Astra had have killed you, hit you, it would have killed you, because it explained, this is my Shakti." I think it was his Shakti weapon or something. So Krishna did so many different things. Another one where, who was it? Not Jarasandha, who was it? Jayadrath. His father had this benediction that whoever caused his, because his father was very proud, you know, and he didn't want to pay his obeisances to anyone. And he said, but whoever causes my son's head to touch the ground, their head will break into a thousand pieces instantly. So then what Krishna had done, he knew this, and his father was sitting nearby the Jamuna, I think, or somewhere like that, meditating. So Krishna knew that the benediction that the Jayadrath had. So at that, you know, because there was that vow that Arjuna had taken that, you know, if I don't kill Jayadrath at the end, because Jayadrath was the one who arranged for Abhimanyu to be killed. And Arjuna was just really, really fried with the guy. And so he said that, you know, if I don't kill him by the end of this day, I'll enter into the fire. So Krishna was a little bit sort of annoyed with him because he said, why did you take such a vow? Because he's kind of realizing I have to work pretty hard to sort of, you know, bring this vow to fruition. And so then what happened was at the end of the day when you know, Krishna used his chakra to cover up the sun, because then everyone relaxed, well, the sun's gone now, Arjuna has to enter the fire. But actually then when they all relaxed, then Krishna removed the chakra and he said, kill him. You know, so Krishna tricked everyone, and so then he chopped off his head. But then Krishna made an arrangement so his chakra would carry the head of Jayadrath and then drop it in the lap of his father. So that Arjuna wasn't the one who caused his head to hit the ground. Jayadrath's father was the one who caused his head to hit the ground. So he saw the lap like that, and the head fell on the ground, and then his head split into a thousand pieces. So Krishna made so many amazing arrangements. So Kunti was aware of this. She was aware of all the different arrangements that Krishna had made, and she was just like in awe. And then in the next verse, really, really nice verses, Vipada Shantatashashat Babato Dasanam Nyashat Apunam Babadashanam. And it was like, you look at, you know, what they went through, all the calamities they had to go through as a result of the enmity of the Kauravas and others, you know, the friends of the Kauravas and that. And you know, just unending calamities. You know, just unending, you know, and you know, because of the envy of Duryodhana and all his associates, because Duryodhana wanted to be the king, and he wasn't actually the lawful king, he wasn't the rightful king, because his father was blind. Whereas Pandu, he was the rightful king, even though Dhritarashtra was his older brother, because you know. In those days, it was, you know, one had to be qualified. Not just because you're born into the family. And someone who was blind from birth couldn't be the king. How are you going to rule a kingdom? How are you going to fight a war if you can't see? And so he wasn't qualified to be the king. And he resented that. Even though he had a lot of affection for his brother Pandu, he still resented that. And so that when Pandu left his body, when he departed from this world, even though he made the external show of caring for the Pandavas, the five sons of Pandu, still he was always plotting with Duryodhana how to usurp the kingdom and how that Duryodhana, his son, could become the king. So the war was a result of that. But Kunti's praying, because all these calamities you just described in the previous verse, she says, I wish those calamities would happen again and again. I mean, what a bizarre prayer. It's like she just wants things, you know, all this misery to come upon her again and again. And it's not because she has some kind of masochistic tendencies. You know? Like in this world, we, you know, like I say, you know, it's a really crazy world we live in. You know? I mean, people get their pleasures from doing really strange things. You know? But she's praying, I wish those calamities would happen again and again. But why does she want those calamities to happen again and again? It's not for some bizarre pleasure. She's saying, because again and again and again, so that we can see you again and again. Because every time calamities happen to them, what happens? Krishna appears. Krishna comes and saves them. So that's what her motivation is here. I'll go through any amount of suffering, whatever it is you want, just so I can see you. Radharani, she prays the same thing. You know, the last verse of the Shastakam prayers. You know, it's like, you can embrace me, you can trample me under your feet. I don't care what you do. I just know that you're my Lord unconditionally. She just says that, you're unconditionally my Lord. So in the same way, Kunti's praying the same way. I don't care. If we have to undergo these calamities, great. I want them. Bring it on. Why? Because when we see those calamities, we see you again and again. Because every time there's a calamity, you appear. And that means, she's saying here, And foreseeing you means that we no longer will see repeated birth and death. It's not some sort of whimsical, oh, you know, I just like being around Krishna, he's a nice guy. You know, I love you, I want to be with you. Just like, you know, husband, wife, or boyfriend, girlfriend. I love you, I want to be with you all my life, I want to die with you in your arms, all this kind of, you know, stuff. No, it's not a sentimental idea. She's very, very understanding. She's philosophical about it. She's understanding that if we have the darshan of Krishna, no more repeated birth and death. If we're actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the goal of life, no more repeated birth and death. It reminds me of that story a little bit. You know the story of the Brahmin and the cobbler? Anyone heard that story? Very interesting story. Narad Muni, he was travelling around. Narad Muni is also another extraordinary character. Extraordinary. He can go, you know, to Krishna's abode. He can go anywhere he likes. And just travels with his Venus singing the glories of Krishna. And there's actually a song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written about Narad Muni. It reminds me, there's a play the devotees did in the early days, and they wrote this song about Narad Muni. And I can't remember all the words, but he's saying, Narad Muni, I think I'm talking about something loony, but you know, it's like really funny words. Anyhow, so Narad Muni, he was travelling around, and he spoke to Lord Krishna. I'm jumping ahead. He met this Brahmana, and the Brahmana was very nice to him and said, oh, my dear Lord Brahma, well, you know, Lord Narad Muni, he received him and everything like that. Well, where are you going? So I'm going to see Lord Narayan. And, you know, the Brahmana was engaged in studying the Vedas all day and performing yagas and things like that. And then when he heard that he was going to see Lord Narayan, he said, oh, that's so wonderful, you're going to see Lord Narayan. He says, when you see Lord Narayan, can you ask him, when will I be liberated, when will I go back to the spiritual world? And he said, sure, no problems. So then he went on his travels, and he came upon a cobbler who was sitting under a banyan tree. And then, you know, the cobbler was just so overwhelmed that Narad Muni was there. I mean, such an elevated personality, a pure, unalloyed devotee of Krishna, one of the Mahajans. He came to his home. Actually, his home was living under the banyan tree. He didn't have a house. Very, very poor. And, you know, he didn't have any facilities to offer Narad Muni. He just basically had a glass of water and, you know, asked him to sit down. And so he was asking Narad Muni so many different questions. And he asked him, where are you going? And Narad Muni said, oh, I'm actually going to see Lord Narayan. He goes, oh, you're going to see Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan, he's so amazing. He was a great devotee of Lord Narayan. And then Narad Muni, somehow or other, Narad Muni actually asked him if he wanted to know when he was going back to the spiritual world. And he said, oh, you can ask that if you like, you know, I don't mind. And then, so Narad Muni, it's quite a lengthy story, we cut it short. Narad Muni went to the spiritual world and he met with Lord Narayan. And he said, oh, there's two devotees down there that want to know when they're going back to Godhead. And Narayan, he said, the Brahmana, he's not going, after many, many births, he'll return to the spiritual world. And Narad Muni was a bit confused. And he said, the cobbler, he'll return at the end of this life. And Narad Muni, he couldn't understand that. And he said, but my dear Lord Narayan, the Brahmana, he's executing so many Vedic duties, he's doing this, he's doing that, you know, all he's doing everything right. And the cobbler, he's making shoes all day. He's engaged in this dirty activity making shoes. So how come it is? So Lord Narayan didn't answer the question. He said to Narad Muni, he said, you just tell them, you know, when you see them, they'll ask you what I was doing. And you tell them, I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle, backwards and forwards. And Narad Muni was like, I don't understand this. But anyhow, he had faith in what Narayan said, so he went down and he saw the cobbler, the Brahmana. And the Brahmana said, oh, he went through the formalities of greeting Narad Muni. He said, so when am I going back to Godhead? He was like bursting with enthusiasm. He just wanted to know when he was going back. And he said, oh, actually, Lord Narayan said that you're not going back for many, many births yet. And the Brahmana became disgusted. He said, what? What is the use of all my study of the Vedas and ritualistic ceremonies? What's the use of it? Waste of time. My whole life I've given it to him and I'm not going back to Godhead. And he said, ridiculous. And then he asked, what was Lord Narayan doing? And Narad Muni said, well, actually, interesting you should ask that. He was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmana said, that's ridiculous. Nobody can throw an elephant in the eye of a needle. I don't believe you. This is nonsense. And he sort of stormed off. And then, you know, Narad Muni was a bit reflective after that. Well, that's very interesting. You know, he's a Brahmin all his life, he's doing this, and he doesn't believe that Narayan's doing these things. And then so he went and saw the Brahmana, no, the cobbler, sorry. And same sort of thing, the cobbler received him, he was very happy to see him, and just took care of him, worshipped him, that, like that. And then the conversation went on, and the cobbler wasn't really that interested, you know. And Narayan Muni said, do you want to know when you're going back to Godhead? And he said, you can tell me if you like. I said, well, Narayan said you're going to go back home at the end of this life. And he was so grateful. He said, oh, that's so nice. You know, Lord Narayan is so kind. And then he asked, he said, but what was Lord Narayan doing when you saw him? He said, actually, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And he said, oh, Lord Narayan, he's so wonderful. He can do anything. And Narad Muni said, oh, you believe that? And he says, why not? He's Lord Narayan, he's the Supreme Personality of God, he can do anything. And then he said, just see, here I am. It just wasn't some sentimental understanding. Here I am, I'm sitting under a banyan tree. And in the banyan tree there's so many fruits. And in every fruit there's thousands of seeds. You see a fig, it has thousands of seeds in it. And anyone seen a banyan tree? They're gigantic, sometimes several kilometers across. Gigantic trees. And then he said, and in every seed there is a banyan tree. So if Lord Narayan can put a banyan tree into a tiny little seed, to put an elephant through the eye of the needle is a very simple thing. So you see, he's got understanding of the greatness of Krishna. It's not just some sentimental, emotional thing. He understands the greatness of Krishna. So in the same way we see that Kunti, she understands her position. She understands the position of Krishna. She understands what is the need of the jiva, is to take shelter of Krishna. So therefore, her prayers are not just some sort of emotional presentation. Her prayers are actually deep, very deep realizations, very deep instructions for us all. And that's why Srila Prabhupada puts so much emphasis on the prayers of Queen Kunti. You know, Kunti's praying like this, yes, calamity's fine, bring them on. Because when the calamities come, I see Krishna. When I see Krishna, no longer repeated birth and death. She understands. It's not some sort of, you know, it's not even intellectual for her. She's accepted it. This is the way it is. And then here in this verse, she's praying, you know. It's like, if you go away, we're lost. We've got nothing but you. You know, you're thinking you've done your duties. And Vishnu Thakur, he makes an interesting comment on this, because in these words here it says, where is it? Svakrita. So Prabhupada in the transliteration is giving this as self-executed. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives another understanding of it. He's saying that actually you don't have to do the duties because they're all done by themselves. Everything's automatically carried out by Krishna's energy. So you don't need to go and do them because they'll get done anyhow. And this is the nature of Krishna. He does everything by his energies. Very extraordinary. But Kunti is saying that, you know, you're leaving us today. She's trying to give Krishna a reason not to leave. Because really, she just wants, you know, she wants to be under his shelter all the time. She's saying, if you go away, we've killed all these, you know, elderly kings. You know, millions and millions and millions of great powerful kshatriyas were killed at the Battle of Kurukshetra. But what about their relatives? Their relatives have, as she's saying here, they have enmity towards us. So all the kings left in the world, they have enmity towards the Pandavas. Because why? The Pandavas killed all their forefathers. So you go away, they'll attack us. And they'll kill us. And so she was expressing this great, as Prabhupada was saying, this complete surrender. And it's interesting, in his class on this verse, Prabhupada comments about the nature of that surrender, and then he talks about Sharanagati, the six different aspects of surrender, and how, you know, we just see Krishna as all in all, that everything comes from Krishna, that we just accept whatever is favourable for Krishna consciousness, we reject that which is not favourable. I think Rupa Goswami also taught this, that's coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but Rupa Goswami also, in the beginning of the Upadeshamrita, he gives six things that are favourable for the execution of pure devotional service and six things that are unfavourable. So, you know, the dati pratikrina, you know, what's that? You know, like to associate with devotees. Utsahan Nishjadaya Tat Kamravata Sangujagat Stobrite Sadhvi Bhakti Prasidyati. There's Utsahan, enthusiasm. Nishjayad. Sorry? I'm hard of hearing. I'm hard of seeing and hard of hearing.
Confidence.
Yeah, confidence, patience. Tat Kamravata. It's following the rules and regulations. Sangujagat Satobriti. It's interesting. He says it twice in different ways. Sankratyaga, giving up inauspicious association. Satobriti is having an auspicious association. Sadhvi Bhakti Prasiddhi. These six things, Bhakti Prasiddhi, they nurture, they develop Bhakti. Very important. Then in the next verse, he describes the six things that are unfavorable. Atyahara prayaschascha prajalpo niyamagraha jana sangascha lolyamcha sadhvi bhakti vinashiti. Vinashiti means destroyed. So he says, atyahara, collecting more than necessary, eating more than required, over-endeavoring for all these mundane things. Prajalpo, talking mundane topics. It's so difficult to control the tongue. You know, the tongue is busy with, you know, there's a verse in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, talks about how the birds, you know, they're just vibrating all this. You know, sometimes you see them. Like, I don't know what it's like around here, but when you go up to Burley Heads, there's all these hoop pines along the beach there, and the parrots, they come in the hoop pines, and every evening they come. That's where they nest. They come back in the evening. You hear them squawk, squawk, squawk. It's deafening, the noise they're making, and they're just talking about the day, all mundane topics. So when we hear people talking about all the mundane topics, it's just like the squawking of these parrots. It's the same thing. You know, people are just talking about mundane topics. The problem is as devotees, we should understand the dangers of talking about mundane topics. Yet still, we engage in it. We talk about this one, we talk about that one. Oh, did you hear what they did? So-and-so is like this, so-and-so is like that. I don't like them, they did this. All mundane topics. Better is we spend our time speaking about Krishna. And actually, we see that when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was questioned, because you know someone was asking about the activities of society, and he was saying how they write a newspaper. I think it was called the Amrita Patrika, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, there's this like monthly newsletter they put out, and this person was very surprised that, oh, monthly you're putting out a newsletter? And he said that actually there's so much going on in the spiritual world, you could put out a newsletter every day. And we see newspapers, they're putting out all these mundane newspapers every day. I mean, here in Melbourne, how many do you have? You have 2, 3, 4 every day. So much nonsense. You're filling up with so much stuff. And they even repeat the things, you know. Like they'll put it in during the week, they'll put it on the weekend, so they make the weekend one seem fatter. You know? And it's just all mundane topics. And the thing is, if one becomes absorbed in these mundane topics, these things will drag us down into the material world further and further, because this is our focus. Whereas if we focus on the topics of Krishna, these topics will liberate us. You know, just to give attention to Krishna. And this is the... Because I actually thought I was giving class yesterday, so I have to check on it. But I was reading out this verse yesterday. Because it talks about Shrimpanti Kayanti, that it talks about hearing and chanting. If we look at the focus of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole focus of the Bhagavatam is to glorify the benefits of hearing and chanting. Right from the beginning, it talks about, you know, the benefits of hearing and chanting. We see, you know, all throughout, there's so many different stories. You know, the story of Ajamila. Look what happened to him. You know, he was a brahmana. He became bewildered by lusty desires. He fell down into a most abominable situation. But somehow or other, by the mercy of Krishna, he remembered the name of Narayan at the point of death. It was a trick of Krishna. He was tricked by the material nature into naming his child Narayan, even though he was not at all interested in Narayan. And he remembered Krishna. It's Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvara He. Hari Shortavya Kitavya Smatavya Chitayam. Saying that, Sukadeva Goswami's answering Parikit Maharaj is saying, what's the duty of one of death? And he says, therefore, one who's approaching, the Tasmat Bharata, is Bharata is referring to Parikit Maharaj, Sarvatma, the supreme, you know, the super soul, Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma, Bhagavan, Ishvara, Hari, he's addressing Krishna in four different ways. Just so, not just Parikit Maharaj, but so others who come later understand who he's talking about. He He's not talking about any ordinary person. He's talking about Krishna. Sarvatma, Bhagavan, Ishvara, Hari. Really pointedly summing up who he's talking about. And he says, Srottavya, Kititavyascha, Smartavya, Chittavaya. That you hear about, you talk about, you remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we go to the fourth canto, Tasmat Sankirtan Vishnu Jagam Mangalam Mamasam Mahatam Apikoravya Vidya Kantik and Niskritam. It's talking about, it says, therefore, Tasmat Sankirtan Mangalam, this Sankirtan, this is the most auspicious thing. Was it Tasmat Sankirtan Mangalam, Bhagavat, what's it? Mahatam Apikoravya, it's able to uproot even the greatest fear, the greatest sin, and it can overcome death. It's quite amazing. It's the most auspicious activity in the entire universe, he says. Jangam Mangala Mangmasam Mahatam Mapikairavya. Mahatam, the greatest Kairavya, sinful activities. Can overcome Mahatam Mapikairavya, Vidya Kantika Niskritam. It can overcome the most sinful of activities. And there's so many nice verses throughout the Bhagavatam glorifying the position of holiness. And the whole Bhagavatam essentially is just focusing on the benefits of chanting the holy name. So we see here, you know, that this is what Kunti is engaged in. She's engaged in chanting the holy name. She's engaged in glorifying Krishna's activities. And the Bhagavatam is giving us this direction. It's giving this impetus. Because our tendency is also to want to hear about mundane things, to want to talk about mundane things, to want to read about mundane things. But the Bhagavatam is pointing out that this is, what is it, compares unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. These mundane topics, it's just like the crows. Becoming more common here in the West, but also very, very common in India. It's like the national bird of India is the crow. You see them, you're sitting on the rubbish heaps in Calcutta. You know, it's like here in Australia, all the rubbish heaps are hidden. You don't see them. In a place like Calcutta, every corner practically is this big rubbish heap. And the crows are just there and they're just loving it. Eating all this most abominable refuse. Things have been rotting and stinking. You know, and so these mundane topics are just like a place of pilgrimage for the crows. Just like many of you have been to Vrindavan. And if you have the good fortune when you go to Vrindavan, you go to Prakram with someone like Dinabandhu or Radhanath Maharaj or something, you can actually start to appreciate the real nature of Vrindavan. Because when we go there because of our conditioned nature, we just see the dust, the dirt, the pigs, the monkeys. You know, all these unpleasant sides, you know, the beggars harassing you for money, the pandas at the various temples, you know, harassing you for money. You see all that type of stuff. But one who actually has the opportunity to visit the Dharma and the association of an advanced Vaishnava actually gets to appreciate the nature of the Dharma. So, I forgot the point I was making. I do that a bit. So the Bhagavatam is focusing on helping us to appreciate this nature of Krishna. It's glorifying it. We see in the 10th canto, glorifying the Dharma, glorifying the nature of Krishna. So I can't remember the point I was making. The purpose of Bhagavatam is hearing and chanting. There's a specific point that I was bringing up from Dharma, but I don't remember. Anyhow, I may remember it later. I'll read some of the purport. It's quite a lengthy purport. The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck they were entirely dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. And it's kind of interesting because Prabhupada says in the material world to be dependent upon the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. Not just a sign of misfortune, Prabhupada is saying the utmost sign of misfortune. It's like you're a beggar. You know, you have to go to the unemployment people and depend upon the handouts from the government. Utmost misfortune. Completely at the mercy of the government. If they decide they're going to reduce your payments, oh, this is very lamentable. If they decide they're going to kick you off, very lamentable situation. I have no shelter. What am I going to do? I'm going to die. You know, I'm going to have to go down the Salvation Army or something like this and get a handout. Very, very lamentable situation in this material world. But Prabhupada is saying here, very interestingly, the Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. They had no other shelter. They didn't try to make any arrangements. I mean, you look at them, you know, the Pandavas, most powerful Kshatriyas. You know, Bhima was described as having the strength of 10,000 elephants. Brihadara was his name. Brihadara, wolf belly. He used to eat like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. Like, you know, he could... The whole prasadam in the morning he'd eat on his own and still be hungry. Yeah. When the Pandavas used to go out and collecting alms for, you know, when they were living in exile, they'd go out begging, they'd get alms. So what they do is they cook it up and divide it in half. Half was for Bhima, and the rest, you know, for the rest of them. There was five of them. There was Draupadi and the four other brothers. They would take the rest. So, yeah, that was just... you know, we look at Arjuna. He was the greatest archer. The twins, Nakula and Sahadev, also very great warriors. And Yudhisthira, great leader, great warrior. Yet they were completely dependent upon Krishna. They weren't, you know, you see someone who's a powerful person, they think, by my might, by my strength, I will conquer my enemies. It's a very common thing. You know, we see, you know, the powerful man, he's in there, he's fighting. But what happens when you get old? What happens when you get some disease? Where's your power gone? You know, anyone who's aging, you know, when you get past 40, past 50, you start to see aging. The body diminishes. The body is just dwindling, wasting away. Where's your power now? Oh, when I was young, I could do this, I could do that. I'm so strong. Where's your power now? So this is the situation for everyone in this material world. It's like, where is your strength really? How much can you, how much by your own endeavor can you achieve in this world? You know, Arjuna is talking about, you know, the nature of the mind and how it, you know, the wind is so powerful. He, you know, he says to control the mind is more difficult than controlling the wind. And that's the fact. In this world, the material nature is so powerful. On our own, what can we do? How can we overcome Maya? We can't. We can't actually overcome Maya. So Krishna, he says, this divine energy mind consisting of the three modes of material nature. He says divine. Deva. It's divine energy. Because it's coming from Krishna, it's divine. It's very difficult. Mamaya duratyaya. Duratyaya means very difficult. And he says, mameva jaya prabhadyam teva. Those who surrender to me, mayamitam taranti te. This maya, etam taranti. They go past it easily. They cross over. So it's the same thing here. Kunti has surrendered to Krishna. The Pandavas have surrendered to Krishna. Draupadi surrendered to Krishna. A classic example of a surrender was when they were trying to disrobe her. And she was trying to hold on to the cloth. She was fighting and fighting. And Dushasana is a great, powerful chakra. She's just a tiny little girl. I mean, it's like you look at, you know, my situation with my wife, right? She's this tall on me. A tiny little girl. She's half my weight. Half my size. Literally, she's half my weight. So if I decided that I wanted to overpower her, what could she do? So it's the same like with Dushasana and Draupadi. Even though she's a chakra woman, still, it's like, what can she do against Dushasana? But she was trying to fight. She was trying to hold onto the cloth, and she was fighting a losing battle because he was taking her cloth and she was becoming disrobed. Then at one point she realized, I'm not going to be able to do this. I need to surrender to Krishna. So she just threw up her arms. Hey Govinda, hey Gopal. She surrendered to Krishna completely. And then Krishna himself became the cloth. And it's described how that when Dushasana was pulling the cloth off her, he was becoming exhausted. This big powerful chakra. He's pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. Keep pulling the cloth. So much cloth he became exhausted. The whole assembly room is described filled up with cloth. Because Krishna became the cloth. He supplied the cloth. So in the same way, in this material world, the same thing for us, is as long as we're trying to make the arrangements to be the controller, to be the enjoyer, material nature will allow us to do that. Allow us our illusion. To think that we're the controller and enjoying this material world. And you'll have to struggle. Manasastanindrini prakriti stani kasti. You'll be struggling very hard with the six senses, including the mind. This stani kasti, this hard struggle. And anyone who's out there trying to, you know, enjoy the material world, manipulate the material world, knows it's a struggle. Very hard struggle. You know, trying to make an income, trying to raise a family, trying to get a house, trying to get all these things. Very difficult struggle. But one who surrenders to Krishna, mayam mitam taranti, very easy cross beyond this struggle. There's no struggle. Because you surrender to Krishna and things... You know, you see, there's a really nice... story in India about Tulsi's last, I think. Tulsi. His wife was always pushing him to, you know, I want this, I want the kind of thing. But he was just, he just sit there under his bhajans all day long. And so many different calamities came upon him. He didn't try to do anything about it. But Krishna just every time just made arrangements for him so that he could overcome. And we see Pandavas the same thing. So many calamities befall them, but every time Krishna saves them. And which Kunti is talking about in verse 24, how they tried to poison them, how they tried to disrobe Draupadi, how they tried to do this, they tried to do that, to do so many things. Constant. Well, look at Prahlad Maharaj. Another wonderful example. Another Mahajan. Look at his example. His father tried to do so many horrible things to his own son. This is the nature of the materialistic person. They don't care who it is. Son, father, sister, daughter, don't care. You know, so many abominable things happen that they do to each other. They kill their parents, they kill their children, they kill them in the womb, they kill them outside the womb, they rape them. Don't care. I have this desire, I'm going to enjoy you. I'm going to manipulate you, I'm going to exploit you. So the same thing with you know, because we talk about the demons and think, oh yeah, but they're the demons. No, but the people now are so demonic. The things they're doing to their near and dear are so demonic. And the things that Hiranyakashipu was doing to Prahlad Maharaj. Boiled him, tried to boil him in oil, tried to have him killed by weapons, tried to have him bit by poisonous snakes, had him thrown off a cliff. Poisons, there's so many different things. And every time, he was just taking shelter of Krishna. He wasn't trying to protect himself. And so Krishna saved him every time. So, it's not something we can imitate. It's not something we can do very easily. Not that you think, oh, I'm just going to be like Prahlad Maharaj and, you know, I'll just walk out on the road and if a car tries to run me over, Krishna's going to protect me. I wouldn't chance that just yet. We need to make some serious advancement in devotional service. We need to actually become surrendered, which means that I'm making no endeavor for myself. And Prabhupada explains in his class, he quotes this really interesting verse from Rupa Goswami. And there's a section in the 23rd chapter of the Madhya Lila where Lord Chaitanya is explaining to Sanatana Goswami the development of ecstatic love for devotional service. And then Rupa Goswami quotes these in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna fructifies, the following 9 symptoms manifest in one's behavior. Forgiveness, concern that time should not be wasted. This is avartya kalatvam, I think he says. Avyakta kalatvam. We don't want to waste it. Tvam, even a moment of yad, we don't want to waste it. You're very concerned that every moment of our time is used in Krishna service. And we see Prabhupada was a wonderful example of a person who was concerned that every moment should be used in Krishna service. And therefore we see he was so effective. He was so productive. He did so much. And his disciples would be amazed at how much Prabhupada got done. I mean, just look at these books. You know, I'm trying to write two volumes of books, and I'm just editing it. I'm not even writing it, and I've been working on it for 4 years. You know, and it's just taking so long to get it done. Whereas Prabhupada, every day he'd rise, you know, at 2 a.m. or so in the morning, and work through till, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 in the morning. Every morning he would just plod away, and he's done, you know, like all the Bhagavatams up to the 10th canto, chapter 10 or 12, I can't remember, something like that, you know, where Lord Rama steals the calves and the cowherd boys. He worked up there. A whole Chaitanya Charita. How long did it take to do the Chaitanya Charita? 2 months. Yeah. The Bhagavad Gita, his first manuscript was stolen, he had to rewrite it again. The Nectar of Devotion, the Nectar of Instruction, all the small books. Prabhupada did that in about 11 years. Extraordinary achievement. Plus, he travelled around the world many, many times, visited temples, gave Bhagavatam class most days, Gita class most evenings. You know, writing letters, look at how many letters there are. You go through the database, look at how many letters he wrote every day, writing so many letters. It's just, if you add it up, it's not humanly possible, one would think. But because Prabhupada was concerned not to waste a moment of time, every moment of time he was using for Krishna service, therefore he was able to achieve so much. Extraordinary, actually. And then detachment, absence of false prestige, hope, eagerness, a taste for chanting the holy name. So Prabhupada, this is the first one he talked about, a taste for chanting the holy name. That's, where is it? Namagani Sadaruchi. So this Sadar, Namagani, means that chanting the holy Sada Ruchi, always getting the toast because, taste because we're always chanting the holy names of Krishna. So that's the first thing he emphasizes. And he's saying, you know, you look at great Vaishnavas, they have this taste for chanting the holy names. You know, they just can't stop chanting the holy names. But we're not on the same platform. So therefore we have to start somewhere. So Prabhupada emphasizes that we make sure that without fail every day we chant 16 rounds, because in this way we'll develop the taste for chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because it's a purificatory process, we gradually become purified. And then he goes on to explain attachment to descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, living in or affection for those places where the Lord resides, a temple or a holy place like Vrindavan. And so he just goes on to describe these various different symptoms and the importance of the process of devotional service for helping us to awaken this real taste. And then, you know, one day we could also develop this attitude or mood like Kunti. I'll try to finish the purport, but this is so interesting, this purport. But in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case when we can live completely dependent upon Him. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything, but the cruel material nature does not allow us to become independent. Notice how it doesn't say material nature, it says the cruel material nature. Because you may endeavor in so many ways, but the law of karma is the law of karma. Stringent. If this is meant to happen, bang, it happens. Are you meant to die at this point? Doesn't matter how many people are attached to you, doesn't matter what you want to get done, bang, you're dead. There's no argument, there's no discussion, it's just, you're gone. Like that. I was, Nrisimhadeva, I think many of you may not know Nrisimhadeva, he was a brahmachari in his temple back in the 80s. One of the early brahmacharis. And he left his body a couple of weeks ago, and I did the last rites for him. And you know, big body, very strong man. But he had an accident, and then there was some complication from the accident because he had some kidney disease, a liver disease and stuff. They gave him some medicine. Of course, his kidney to collapse, and his liver to collapse, and the whole thing collapsed, you know. And he died, just like that. Everyone was shocked. But that's the way it is. It's like you never expect it when it's going to come, but it's going to come. Be sure of that. Doesn't matter if you're 15 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, it's going to come. It's like I was saying last night, you know, Prabhupada, it was questioned, oh, why is the death rate in India so high? He said, no, it's the same everywhere. 100%. Yeah. Be aware of that. It's real. It's going to happen to you. Not just somebody else. And that's like when Yudhisthira was questioned by Yamaraj in the disguise of the troll, you know, what is the most amazing thing in the world? And you could think, oh, the most amazing thing, oh, you know, this new jumbo jet they've got, that's so amazing, or the new Apple computer, you know. A materialistic person kind of think like that, oh, these things are amazing. But you know what he said? Ahani hani bhutani gajati yamaraj. The most amazing thing in the world is everyone sees that all their relatives, all their friends, everyone before them has gone to the abode of death, yet still they think it's not going to happen to them. Most amazing. Pashanapi na pashiti. Even though they're seeing it, still they don't see. They're blinded by illusion. They think, I'm going to live forever. The scientists, I was mentioning last night, I saw this headline in The Age, the scientists have concluded, there's a conference going on in Australia right now, they've concluded that what they're going to do is they're going to make these like bionic bodies for people. They're going to take the brain out and put it into a new body. And then you're going to live forever. You know, a new body, no disease. So that means we can close down all the hospitals. Yeah? I mean, what fairy stories have they been reading? Yeah? They think that's actually going to work? They're going to pull the brain out and stick it into another body? You know, they haven't been able to stop people from dying. They're just in such illusion. You know, that maya prahiti jnana, their knowledge is stolen by the material energy. They're thinking, but maya stolen their knowledge. Materials is read that. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of material nature is known as material advancement of experimental knowledge. The whole material world is moving on this false attempt of becoming independent of the laws of nature, beginning from Ravana, who wanted to prepare a direct staircase to the planets of heaven, down to the present age. They are trying to overcome the laws of nature. Just see, you're meant to die. That's part of the package. You know, it's not going to be any different. Everyone, birth, death, old age, disease, guaranteed in this world. Just accept it. Deal with it. Conquer it by Krishna consciousness, not by some material manipulation. You know, you take the brain out of one body, you stick it into another body. You think that's going to stop death? Even if they were successful with that endeavor, the guy would walk out on the street and get run over by a truck. His brain would get squashed. What's he going to do then? Huh? You going to put that back together? Stupid endeavor. They are trying now to approach a distant planetary system by electronic mechanical power. But the highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. You know, it's like, you know, they send these things up in space, you know, and they think, oh, we're so clever, we've got this electronic thing, you know, and we're going to get pictures back from the moon. And then the thing lands, you know, not properly in the crater, falls over, it's upside down, its legs are sort of in the air. And, you know. It's just such foolish endeavors. Wasting billions of dollars of taxpayers' money. Billions and billions of dollars. And it happens so often that these things fail. You know, like just recently, one of those countries in Asia, they shot up a thing, you know, they're going to put this big thing, they're going to shoot up and do their space thing, and it blew up. Happens all the time. You know, waste of money. But the highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. Work with valor. Be noble. Don't cheat. Don't lie. Don't be dishonest. Be noble in your endeavors. Be ladies and gentlemen, but work for the satisfaction of the Lord, depending on the Lord. The Pandavas were the ideal executors of this standard of civilization. You know, Yudhisthira was such a noble person. He never spoke a lie in his life. Undoubtedly, they were completely dependent on the goodwill of Lord Sri Krishna, but they were not idle parasites of the Lord. You know, they're not just lying around sort of sucking off Krishna. No, they worked hard for Krishna. They were all highly qualified, both by personal character and by physical activities. Still, they always looked for the mercy of the Lord, because they knew that every living being is dependent by constitutional position. You just look at every jiva. We're dependent upon something. We're dependent. That's our nature. The perfection of life is therefore to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord, instead of becoming falsely independent in the material world. Those who try to become falsely independent of the Lord are called anatta, not with an R, but with anatta, or without any guardian. Whereas those who are completely dependent on the will of the Lord are called sanatta, or those having someone to protect them. Therefore, we must try to be sanata, so that we can always be protected from the unfavorable condition of the material existence. And an interesting analogy here is you look at a child. A child is completely dependent. Just like I was talking to Chandu last night, and his little boy was there, and he was introducing me to his boy. And his boy was scared because, you know, I'm like, you know, five times his height. I'm like this big monster sort of towering over him. And then as soon as he saw me, he ran around behind his father, took shelter of his father. You know, he's scared, but he feels safe with his father. So Prabhupada says that we need to chant Hare Krishna like that, just like a young child is crying out for its mother. We need to chant Hare Krishna like me. Not that we start crying and bawling our eyes out and stuff, but no, it means that when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're taking shelter of Krishna, understanding that this is my only means of salvation. I take shelter of the Holy Name. This is the only way. And Lord Chaitanya says, Nasti eva, Nasti eva, Nasti eva, Katira Nitya. This is the only way. Just like the child, their only shelter is their parents. So in the same way, chant Hare Krishna with their only shelter being Krishna. By the deluding power of the external material nature, we forget that the material condition of life is the most undesirable perplexity. The Bhagavad Gita therefore directs us, 7:19, that after many, many births, one fortunate person becomes aware of the fact that Vasudeva is all in all, and the best way of leading one's life is to surrender to him completely. That is the sign of a Mahatma. All the members of the Pandava family were Mahatmas in household life. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the head of these Mahatmas, and Queen Kunti Devi was the mother. The lessons of the Bhagavad Gita and all Puranas, specifically the Bhagavat Purana, are therefore inevitably connected with the history of the Pandava Mahatmas. For them, separation from the Lord was just like the separation of a fish from water. You ever see a fish when it's out of water? It's really, you know, just distressed condition. So the Pandavas were the same. Srimati Kunti Devi therefore felt such separation like a thunderbolt, and the whole prayer of the queen is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with them. After the battle of Kurukshetra, although inimical kings were killed, their sons and grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. It is not only the Pandavas who are put into a condition of enmity, but all of us are always in such a condition. And the best way of living is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord and thereby overcome all difficulties of material existence. Such a wonderful verse in purport that Prabhupada's really clearly spelling out our position in this material world and how we can overcome that position. It's only by taking shelter of Krishna that one can actually attain that position. No other endeavor. You can spend your whole life, many millions of lifetimes, endeavoring to try to overcome the perplexities of material nature. You'll never succeed. It's just not possible. Because we are so infinitesimally small. The material nature is so great. If you take shelter of Krishna, mayam mitam tanah. You easily, not even difficult. It's just like, you know, it's compared. There's vats of a dam, like the hoof of a calf. You just cross over it and take shelter of Krishna. It's a simple solution. Okay, thank you. Any questions at all? Mahatmaji.
When you were telling about how Krishna helped Pandava, two things came to my mind. One is when Duryodhana sent Durvasana, and when he took 10,000 disciples with him for them, and then Krishna came, one part he took from, and then everybody was satisfied.
But look at Draupadi. She took shelter of Krishna because she knew, I can't do this. I can't, you know, how am I going to cook for 10,000 people? You know, so she just called out for Krishna. She had learned, you know, previously, you know, with the thing with the sari, by taking shelter of Krishna, he'll protect me. So she just didn't know what to do. She knew, you know. She accepted that she did not have the potency, the power to get out of that situation, so she just took shelter of Krishna. So that's another instructive lesson for us, is to take shelter of Krishna.
Another example comes to my mind. Only a few years back in Mumbai, when there was that terrorist activity, one devotee was there, and he was completely safe. It was Krishna. He took shelter from Krishna, and then nothing happened. You know, that chanting.
Yeah, I have a friend who was actually I've forgotten his name now. When the planes ran into the buildings in New York, he was in one of the buildings next door when it all fell down, and you know, Krishna protected him. Anything else? Rakhi Krishna Marike, Mari Krishna Rakike. Krishna wants to protect you. No one can kill you. Krishna wants to kill you. No one can. Okay, Kantra, Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaventa Bhakti. Okay, I'm not sure what the program is, but Vyasa Puja for Indra Maharaj, for all those who are interested in attending. Of course, disciples, it's kind of obligatory for disciples to attend. But for all those who are interested in attending, the program starts at 10 a.m.